This is Audiograph. I'm Julie Kane. And if those two sentences sound familiar to you, well, they should, because that's how we've introduced our weekly sonic treasure hunt for the past 3 years. Wow.
Surprise, surprise!
And to celebrate, we're listening back to some of our favorite sonic signatures from the past year. We'll hear sounds that have gone away for good and sounds that ring out every single week, like this one.
6RY net control standing by for net for siren.
This is a sound with its own Yelp page, average rating 3.5 stars. Here's one of my favorite reviews.
Without your help, many Tuesdays I would likely be alerted to fill my belly with food, not by a voice sounding strangely reminiscent of James Earl Jones, but by the rumblings of my own stomach.
Think you know what he's talking about? To bring you the answer, I set out on a quest. Here's what I found. It's a little before noon on a Tuesday, and I'm at San Francisco's Department of Emergency Management, right across from Jefferson Square Park in the Fillmore. I'm standing in a room filled with computers and monitors and blinking lights.
What time is it now?
It's 11:53.
That's Joseph Molinari. He works for San Francisco's Department of Technology.
And my main function is to maintain and operate the siren system, the outdoor public warning system.
The Outdoor Public Warning System, better known as the Tuesday Noon Siren, a way to let San Franciscans know what to do if something seriously bad happens, a major earthquake, say, or a tsunami.
You could announce real time over the microphone that for people to stay out of this area, or if there was an earthquake and buildings were unsafe, you could tell people to evacuate certain areas.
The system's been around since World War II. Right now, there are 112 sirens strategically located all over the city. The newest one was added in 2014. And every Tuesday at noon, an actual human being clicks a mouse to set off the system.
If it was all automated and there was an emergency, then the person here may not be familiar with the operation of the system.
It's not just city employees who do the Tuesday test, though. There's also a group of volunteer ham radio operators called the Auxiliary Communication Service, or ACS. Molinari says they're a big part of making sure we stay safe.
And they station themselves throughout the city on Tuesday at noon and listen to the sirens. And if they can't hear the voice, for example, or they can't hear the siren wail in a specific area, they report on that. We better let John get in here so that he can... You synced him? Okay.
It's 11:59. John Del Porto, a central fire alarm dispatcher, readies himself at a computer terminal, hand poised on a mouse.
So right at 45, we go ahead and set the siren off, and then at noon, the siren goes ahead and goes off. So we're now 21 seconds away. Okay, I went ahead and set the siren off.
Number 2-9. I was outdoors. Tone in English, loud and clear. No Spanish. KK6AJK, back to net.
I was outdoors at the corner of Bosworth and Diamond Streets.
The cross streets are Francisco and Baker. I heard one siren to the probably northeast. Both tone and voice were loud and clear. KG6 QDJ back to net.
Good afternoon, Jim. This is Alpha Alpha 6 Sierra Foxtrot. My name is Peter Papa Echo Tango Echo Romeo. I am located at 22nd Street and Carolina. I am outdoors. I heard siren number one. Voice message was heard, and the voice test message was understood.
Peter McElmurray, Alpha Alpha 6 Sierra Foxtrot, is part of the Auxiliary Communication Service.
This is the end of report for AA6SF.
We've met high atop Potrero Hill next to San Francisco's original warning siren, siren number one. Normally, McElmurray reports on siren 85 at Scott and Geary.
I live in Japantown, so I report from the balcony of my apartment.
Like many ACS volunteers, he got the ham radio bug as part of his local NERT, Neighborhood Emergency Response Team.
Because the cell phone repeaters could go down, the telephone lines could be down, or they could be clogged up, and we could pass information that would be useful in the event of an emergency.
To use the system, you need a license and a call sign from the FCC.
We can have 20 to 30 people check in on a given Tuesday, and we get used to them. We recognize their voice, their call sign, their name.
Today, McElmurray has a surprise for me. He lends me his radio and his call sign. I get to call in a siren report.
So you press the talk button.
Okay. Hello. I am using control operator sign AA6SF, Alpha Alpha 6, Sierra Foxtrot. My name is Julie, Juliet Uniform Lima India Echo. I'm located at 22nd in Carolina. I'm outdoors. Heard the siren tone loud and clear. We are right by siren number one, and the voice message was heard very clearly, very understandable. It was understood. And this is the end of the report. This is Julie using Alpha Alpha 6 Sierra Foxtrot.
To find out more about what to do in case of an actual emergency, head to our website, kalw.org. And by the way, the man behind the voice of This Is Only a Test is former longtime KFOG DJ Dave Morey. He says the Tuesday noon siren is the best gig he ever had. But just in case the city wants to try out a new message, he sent us this.
Calm down. Take it easy. Everything's okay. In fact, everything is really good because that was just a test, and obviously the system works. Back to your lunch, San Francisco.
Thanks, Dave. Our next sound is one that you actually can't hear anymore because the place it comes from is closed.
Queer women and trans men and just queer folks in general, just to have that space that you could walk into and always feel safe. That's what this was for us.
In 2015, San Francisco's last lesbian bar shut its doors. The Lexington, or the Lex as it's affectionately called, was a watering hole for thousands of queer women and trans men for close to 20 years, until rising rents shut it down. What does last call at San Francisco's last dyke bar mean for the city? KALW's Christina Loring takes us to closing night at the Lex.
The first time I came to the Lex was back in 2009. I'd just moved to the Bay Area from Portland, Maine. I was 24, super femme, and I didn't have any queer friends here. I went to the Lex on a mission, like so many baby queers before me, looking for the mysterious lesbians of San Francisco that I hoped would be my kin, or at least make out with me. Same old story.
You know, some queer gets off the bus. It's like, where do I go? The Lexington, okay.
That's Blair Craig. She's been coming to the Lexington since it opened in 1997.
Then you sort of sit there and look around and eventually talk to somebody and eventually you find your people. And I think that's what's important about the Lexington and what was important about the Lexington.
What was important about it was having a place that would always be there, a queer space that was always open. And tonight, that outpost is about to be gone.
It's heartbreaking on a lot of levels because it's not just, oh, this amazing queer space that was a safe place for a lot of people, regardless of sexuality, that's gone.
That's longtime patron Jennifer Chachnoff.
But it's a sign of the way that money is changing San Francisco and the way that the neighborhoods are changing, so it covers a lot of grounds of being a bummer.
You're surrounded by different people all day long. Sometimes you just want to be around people you know and, you know, people that are like you. And, you know, there's no really place you can go like that, you know?
That's Randy Turner. We're standing outside under the neon pink and blue letters of the Lexington sign. Clusters of women mingle on the sidewalk, chain smoking and crying. It's 10 p.m., 4 hours till last call. 4 more hours till the doors close for good.
I mean, it sucks. I mean, there really is nowhere to go. I mean, I think I've seen a lot of comments of people saying, well, we don't need these kind of spaces. It's like, well, you kind of do.
It's a question being debated between shots of alcohol tonight. Do we still need lesbian bars in the queer mecca of San Francisco? Things are different now than they were when the Lex opened her doors back in 1997.
The mission was really different. When we opened, it was largely a Latino neighborhood, but also a huge neighborhood for dykes and lesbians and queers and also artists and musicians.
Lila Thurkild is the owner of the Lex.
A lot of lesbian-owned businesses and that's just where everybody kind of lived and hung out, so it was the natural place to open the bar.
Thurkild wanted to create a gathering place that would always be there, a staple, a beacon, a living room for queers.
We never closed over the holidays because even though we would lose money every year on that, it was so important to have a space that was always there for people that couldn't go home or felt like they needed that surrogate family. And even if it was just one person that came in, we would stay open because we felt like that was really, really important.
It's nearly 1:30 a.m. Last call looms. People cool their sweaty bodies with a few last sips of whiskey. Lila Thurkild cues a very important song on the jukebox. We Belong by Pat Benatar. It's become the Lex's unofficial anthem, an anthem with a message. Although the Lex is closing, queer identity in San Francisco is here to stay.
We're gonna miss you dearly, Lexington. Very, very dearly.
Thank you for letting me become me.
We'll miss you, Lex. We love you.
And that's it. Last call. As people spill out into the street, I can't help but think of it as a large metaphor. These doors are closing, but the essence of the Lex is dispersing beyond her walls. Her evolution of identity almost mirrors my own. I'm not that self-conscious baby queer I was when I first came to town. I'm almost 30. I've found my homo family. My girlfriend and I are shacking up in Bernal Heights next month. I finally realized that there's no one way to be queer. And since there isn't one queer space, I'm making my own wherever I go. For Cross Currents, I'm Christina Loring.
After a long night, it's time to head out across the bay. This is Audiograph. I'm Julie Kane. It's our birthday show, and we're playing you some of our favorite sounds from 2015. Now, lots of local gathering places have their own signature sounds, and this next one is kind of alarming.
One day we decided to have a party where every rat fought another rat. I really thought it was going to be a one-time party, but then everybody's like, when's the next one?
He's done? All right, he's done. He's done.
We'll let KALW's Liza Veal explain this one.
A back lot in West Oakland is packed in tight with punk rock bikers. It's an infestation of black leather. They're even on the neighboring roofs, all crowded in around a boxing ring. Two guys, one barefoot with long dreads, the other stocky with a buzz cut, go at each other. One backs the other against the ropes and pummels his face with boxing gloves. At one corner of the ring, an enormously tall man with the words East Bay Rats written across the back of his leather jacket douses one of the fighters in water and coaches him in a soothing voice.
You're catching him with a bat jab and you're nailing him, but he's also catching you with a jab.
My name's Trevor Latham. I'm the president of the East Bay Rats.
The East Bay Rats Motorcycle Club, a group of guys who pay membership dues to ride together, work on bikes, and throw parties. We're in the back lot of their Oakland clubhouse. And this is fight night. Anyone can get in the ring. They follow boxing regulations, so it's technically legal. But in truth, it gets dirtier than pro boxing. There's grappling, hits to the back of the head. The fighting started
way before that stupid movie.
Way before that stupid movie, Fight Club, you know, with Brad Pitt.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
In the movie, they don't use gloves. Here, they do. And you may think that sanitizes the fight, but Latham says it's the opposite. In a bare-knuckle fight, your fists tend to give out before anyone actually gets knocked out. The gloves mean the hits are harder and go on longer. The fighter in our corner, the one with the buzz cut, pants between rounds. He's drenched in sweat. I ask him,
what hurts?
Nothing.
And how he's feeling.
Pure adrenaline.
Pure adrenaline. Trevor Latham says that's what the East Bay Rats are all about.
Motorcycles are dangerous, and they're the thing I love the most and the thing that I hate the most, you know. But I think that if I didn't have motorcycles, I would risk my life in another way to get the same amount of excitement. Some sort of demon chasing me, you know. And that, the thing that I'm talking about, that's what binds us as a club.
The club started in 1994.
We were just a group of friends riding bikes. We didn't exactly fit in with other bike clubs. We did things a little different. We had our own style. We had our own way. We were into like Mad Max style bikes. That's like rat bikes. Flat black, ugly, duct tape, held together with baling wire. We'd put all our money into just making it go faster and crashing it, and then zero money into chrome and paint.
Is a motorcycle club closer to a book club or a gang?
You know, if we were in Berkeley, we would be in jail. But in Oakland, we're freaking saints.
So it's just they have bigger fish.
Yeah.
Latham says some East Bay Rats may be doing some dirt, but the club isn't organized around a single money-making crime, which is his definition of a gang.
None of us make a dollar off of this. I also don't think for us, if any of us profit off of it, would work.
I really should have asked if the bike club was closer to a book club, a gang, or a church.
We do a really good job of reining ourselves in and being a family for each other and understanding each other. And yeah, when people start going off the deep end, we can sheepdog them back a little bit.
Sheepdog them back, meaning they keep club members from going astray. Latham says that for a rat, burning off aggression in the ring is exactly the kind of salvation that might keep the rest of his life intact. This fight turned out to be one of the longest in Rats history, 9 rounds. It didn't end in a knockout. It ended when one guy began to dry heave and gave up the fight. Once he'd pulled himself together, he and his opponent shook hands. Then they hugged. Then they sort of locked together, holding each other by the back of the head, smiling, deliriously, insanely, on an adrenaline trip that would suspend them above pain.
at least for about 10 more minutes, Latham told me. Then they'd start to feel again.
We don't have judges.
For Cross Currents, I'm Liza Veal.
All right, well, our celebration is almost over, and we think this last sound is a great note to end on. It's been part of the East Bay since 1960.
This time it's love, my foolish
heart. Here's KALW's Colin Peden to tell you more.
Tonight is like a lovely tune. Beware my foolish heart.
Tucked in the back of a darkened bar, a young man sings to a ring of people surrounding an old piano. On top is a tip jar, partially filled with crumpled bills. The singer sits with a drink in front of him, casually holding a mic.
My name is Ben Benjamin. I've been coming here probably about 9 months. I heard about it from a friend, and I felt like it was something I wanted to experience to get the full gist of Oakland and all that it has to offer. And I walked in and there were people doing these songs that I had been listening to for half my life and keeping them alive by singing them. I was delighted.
This time it's love.
Welcome to the Alley.
My
a piano bar and steakhouse in Oakland where people come together every week to sing, or maybe, like Thursday night regular Kent Kessinger, just to sit back and take it all in.
Do you like to sing?
Occasionally. I like watching the old guy tinkle on the keys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How about a round of applause for Rod Dibble?
Well, I'm Rod Dibble, and I'm here at the Alley on Grand Avenue, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights.
Rod Dibble's the piano player. He's been playing here almost every week for the past 55 years. All that time at the keys means that Dibble has memorized a huge repertoire of songs.
I've got about 4,000. I try to learn a song a week or two songs a week.
Yeah.
That's so he can stay a few steps ahead of the requests from the singers, who gather around his piano each week, waiting to take their turn at the mic. When a singer does particularly well, Dibble rings his cowbell in appreciation. Dibble's relationship with the singers is what keeps a lot of people coming back, week after week. Like Ray Ingesert, who started singing here on a whim.
Yeah, I was sitting at one of these tables back here with a friend of mine, and I was just like, Jesus, you know, these people are murdering these songs. And my friend's like, well, go up and sing something. I'm like, oh, okay. And yeah, that was 30-some-odd years ago now. Almost 30 years ago. So, yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while, but by the time Ingesert found the Alley, Rod Dibble had already been playing here for nearly a quarter of a century.
This could only happen to a guy like me.
Yes.
And only happen in a bar like this.
Dibble tells me that when he started in 1960, Oakland had a much different bar scene.
There used to be 5 piano bars on this street alone. And then now it's karaoke and
yeah.
We're the only piano bar now in Oakland.
And that's something that the regulars are proud of, to the point of modifying show tune lyrics to be about the Alley itself.
Each time I'm down, the Alley is. It's making me clown. The Alley is. Why I just sing like a star.
There you go.
It's my kind of bar.
So head over to the Alley on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights and try it for yourself. For Cross Currents, I'm Colin Peden.
The Alley is my kind of razzmatazz, and it has
Rod Dibble's Jazz.
Now, this week's winner of our Sonic Guessing Game knew where we recorded all the sounds in this week's show. Big congratulations to Julian Roque. You got them all right. We're going to send you a KALW hoodie. You've been listening to an audiograph special from KALW News. Special thanks to Berenice Freedom, Christina Loring, Liza Veal, Colin Peden, Chris Hoff, Seth Samuel, Ted Muldoon, Ben Trefney, and Casey Miner. Audiograph is a project of KALW and the Creative Work Fund. I'm Julie Kane. Thanks for sharing this audiograph birthday with me.